AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. We've got more evidence that the used machinery market is picking up momentum heading into the last 2 months of the year. And over the past couple of weeks, we've heard how shipping is at a critical point and how the infrastructure bill is at a critical point. Well, let's get the opinion of the guy that is always focused on the critical point.
Live from the murky depths of the genesis of this week via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with a conversation with Machinery Pete, Greg Peterson. Then it's on to Rich Pawson from Critical Point Podcast. Right after the news, Michael Clark from BAM WX with a weather update. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
Yeah, Davis, here we go. It feels fresh, doesn't it?
It's a
new week, and here we go. Here we go.
Without form and void.
Yes.
Let's just see what happens this week.
My gosh, the weather and the way that things are changing out there right now. Mm-hmm. Big Apple Joe just, you know, before the show started said, wow, we are getting a lot of rain here in northern Indiana. We had rain yesterday over the weekend. We've got more rain coming this week. And then look what happened out on the West Coast. My gosh.
Yeah. Bomb cyclone. Yes.
Bomb cyclone. They went from drought to mudslide season just like that.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get the latest from Michael on what's going on there. And boy, Greg Peterson has got an update for us on the used machinery market that it's just more evidence. It's more evidence of what we've been talking about, that this market is going to stay strong into the end of the year. And then Rich Pawson, our old friend Rich, is going to be back with us. Rich is the author of Critical Point Podcast. Looking forward to getting his take on exactly what is going on with some of these, with the economy and the supply chain and what kind of an impact that's going to have. But we're back to talking about taxing unrealized capital gains. And Janet Yellen is talking about it like it's a really, really good idea. I don't know how they come up with this stuff, but we'll get Rich's take on it, okay?
Okay.
Who knows? Maybe Rich has got an explanation of why it's such a good idea.
You know, I shared a cube with Mr. Pawson for a time.
Yes.
And he always had some thoughts on just about everything. So he should I'm sure he'll have something for us.
I'm sure he will. All right, let's get to it. What you got in the news?
Chip Fed Chair Jerome Powell, who has been calling inflation transitory, said high inflation is likely to last well into next year. Still, he says the central bank is on track to start tapering asset purchases with the aim to wrap up the process in mid-2022. The quote was, let's see, I can't remember the quote now. I should have had my notes out and ready here. Transitory was a big word in focus last week.
Oh, yes. Yeah, absolutely. The thing is, everything is transitory.
Well, Jason Lusk. Everything is transitory. Eventually,
it will end, and it's just a matter of how long the timeline is on it.
That's right. Well, according to estimates by Drew Mattis of MetLife, mentions of the word shortages in the Federal Reserve's Beige Book have surged. It's the latest report published on October 20, and it used the word 70 times. Except for the September tally, that is the most time since the Arab oil embargo in 1973 the word was mentioned. Wow. This as port bottlenecks continue, Chip.
Yeah, there's another connection back to the 70s. That's some scary stuff. We'll have to get Rich's take on that as well.
Well, propane prices have not been this high heading into winter in a decade, which is bad news for the millions of Americans who rely on the fuel to stay warm. At $1.41 per gallon at the Mont Bellevue trading hub in Texas, on the spot prices are about triple those of the past two Octobers. Of the two main U.S. propane futures contracts, one hit a high earlier this month and the other does not have far to climb to eclipse the record it set during the blizzard of 2014, Chip.
Wow.
The average residential price tracked by the U.S. Energy Information Administration has jumped by 50% from a year ago to $2.69 per gallon. We have talked about that blizzard of 2014, that whole winter there, and what happened to propane prices. It was a parabolic move, baby.
It was, no doubt.
Well, House Democrat leaders this week want to vote on the $1 trillion bipartisan infrastructure bill and reach an agreement on the outlines of the reconciliation bill. That's the Build Back Better Act. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said international taxes, a wealth tax, and a stepped-up IRS tax enforcement could be part of the final package.
Oh, boy. Yeah, whenever we start talking about a stepped-up IRS tax enforcement, and 80,000 new IRS employees. You might as well pull your number now because they're going to call it at some time.
Yep. Well, Speaker Pelosi opened the door to Democrats using reconciliation to raise the U.S. debt ceiling without the support of Senate Republicans, whose votes would otherwise be needed to end a filibuster on the increase. The Biden administration is launching a program that would allow veterans with ties to Afghans, as well as others, to sponsor recently evacuated refugees and help them settle locally. The new initiative allows groups of five adults to apply to become so-called sponsor circles responsible for helping resettled refugees. And China said Friday there is no room for compromise or concessions over the issue of Taiwan after a comment by President Biden that the U.S. is committed to defending the self-governing island if it is attacked. Chip.
Man, I tell you what, that's going to be... That's going to be a point of contention, and it already is, and it's only going to get worse before it gets better. All right, thank you very much, Davis. Let's bring in Michael Clark, BAMWX.com. How are you, Michael?
Good, Chip. How are you?
Good, good, good. So tell us what happened out on the West Coast. Wow.
Well, I'll tell you what. It was the strongest Pacific Northwest pressure record ever, Chip. But the central pressure got down to 942 millibars, which beat the previous post-tropical cyclone record of 1977. So it literally bombed out. I mean, and it performed up to its name. The northern half of California just absolutely bombarded with rain, which they needed. I mean, it was in horrible drought condition there. So it was a big.
But
storm.
you like to fix a drought slowly, but this is they're trying to fix it all at once is what it looks like.
Yes. Yeah. Normally that doesn't, it's not going too well, unfortunately. And the wind out there was crazy. I mean, I saw some video of the wind blowing semis over that were on the bridges out there just from that storm. So,
it was remarkable video from that storm.
Yep.
Is that what's going to hit us later this week in the Midwest?
Not particularly. Okay. That storm, I mean, we are going to get another storm, but that storm is going to kind of go off into the north and west. A product of it is going to come through Wednesday into Thursday, though, yes.
Okay, so what does it look like for us here in the Midwest second half of the week?
Yeah, it's wet, especially Minnesota, Iowa, Missouri, yet again, those folks down there are just getting bombarded, along with Illinois, Indiana, Ohio. Inch and a half in the central plains of rain, and then a half inch to an inch here in the eastern Corn Belt. But, Chip, places in north central Indiana, central Illinois, northern Missouri have had over 5-6 inches of rain the last 14 days. And this is just going to kind of be insult to injury. I mean, it's very wet here. It's crazy.
Yeah. We're going to need to get a freeze to get guys back out in the field. I don't think there's any question. All right. Good stuff, Michael. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Chip.
You bet. Michael Clark, BAMWX.com. We've got Machinery Pete up next.
On your farm, achieving better yields is always the goal. But replacing current equipment with new isn't always an option. Bring new life and new technology to your current equipment with a John Deere Performance Upgrade Kit. It all starts at your local John Deere dealer. Schedule an inspection today to see how a customizable performance upgrade kit from John Deere can unlock the potential of your existing equipment. Search John Deere Performance Upgrade Kit to learn more.
A Machinery Pete here, folks. This segment of AgriTalk brought to you by our friends at Dakota Ag Innovations, makers of Dakota Shine, the best way I've seen to fix faded paint. Go to DakotaShine.com or call 888-996-7801.
Unfortunately, Davis, it doesn't look like this weather. We're going to get a couple of days in here with some drier conditions, but boy, the end of the week, like Michael said, really looks soggy again. We're putting the touching the brakes on harvest.
Well, yep. My my daughter, my oldest, is she has not yet graduated from college, but she's working on it. So she has not taken a meteorological course at Iowa's premier Midwestern University as I have. But she did watch a YouTube video over the weekend, and she's convinced that it's just going to be winter from here on out.
Oh, that we're just going to make the move from this, fall to
this is the yes, this is the pivot week. Yes, so we'll see.
Gotcha.
Maybe she's right. She's pretty smart. I mean,
well, there are some others out there that have got some warnings that when it hits, it's going to hit and hit hard.
Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah.
That would be her message as well. Yes. Yes. Beware.
We need to pay attention. We also need to pay attention to what is going on in the used machinery market. We have proven that for some time. And let's get an update now. Greg Peterson, Machinery Pete. Greg, good morning. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing well, guys. How are you doing?
Doing just fine. Did you get some of the rain over the weekend?
A little bit. Here in southeast Minnesota, it wasn't too bad. So
good.
Just adjusting to the chillier temps, but you know, Minnesotans, I guess, so bring it.
Yeah, there you go. You'll get used to it, believe me.
The blood will thicken up.
Yeah, you've got no choice.
Nope.
Okay, let's get to it. This is an odd duck, but let's get to the pick of the week.
Yeah, odd duck is right. Folks maybe saw the YouTube video I posted yesterday. But I've got to use it for the pick of the week, Chip. A 1937 John Deere 62 tractor, which just kind of sounds funny, but they only made, I think, 78, 79 of them, something like that, back in the, I don't know if it was 1 year in 37 or maybe 37 or 38, but one sold Saturday in Hillsboro, Ohio. Our good friends at Rick Williams Auction Company, Rick and Brad, do an awesome job there. And this was for the Donald Kelly Estate. Kind of an unusual auction. It was all toy tractors, but then one real tractor, this 1937 John Deere 62, and it brought $44,000. And I was pretty sure that was a record, but actually, when I got looking in our auction price data, machinerypete.com, there was one higher back. There was a very famous collector auction, July 17th of 2010 in Wolf Point, Montana, by Nixon Auctioneers, where one of the John Deere 62s brought $56,000, but if you take that one away, the next highest one was $36,000 over 10 years ago on a Mecum auction in Wisconsin. So $44K, pretty strong. And if you want to have fun, folks, just check out the YouTube video of my friend Brad Williams selling that thing. It was amazing.
Is it the rarity? Is that less than 80 made? Is that what really brings it? Or is it the restoration job?
No, it's the rareness that when you combine John Deere and rare, I mean, that equals just keep bringing out the Benjamins, because it's, as this one proved, really hard to know going in what it's going to bring. But Rick Williams Auction Company, they did a good job. Brad reached out, told me about it ahead of time. So people knew about it. And obviously, the bidders were there, and $44,000. It was fun to watch that thing sell.
Man, oh, man. Online buyer on that, do you know?
I think Brad at the end said the buyer was from the Ohio West Virginia line, and I couldn't tell from the video if it was an online bidder or someone in the crowd there, but it's still stayed kind of local there.
Yeah, that's interesting. We haven't talked about a collector's item for quite some time because we've been so focused on working used machinery. So this is an interesting update to see that even that segment of the market is still it's pretty red hot itself.
The super nice condition rare ones have lifted, and I tell you, we're gonna have a great opportunity to look deeper at this segment, Chip, with our friends at Mecum Auction. They have their Gone Farming sale coming up. I think it's November 11th, 12th, right in there. Okay. I'll be posting about it, but some really beautiful collector tractors on that sale. So I'm guessing it's going to be through the roof.
Okay. All right. Let's get back to some working equipment. And this is one that I've always, my ears perk up because, as I've said for some time, I'm kind of in the market. But when the market's doing what it's doing, I don't know if I'm in it or not. Greg, let's talk some skid steers.
Yeah, some really eye-opening prices from last week, Chip. Let's go back to last Friday, just up the road from me here in Faribault, Minnesota. My friends at Maring Auction Company had kind of a small farm sale, and it had a Bobcat 742B, so kind of an older model. Very nice. It only was showing 1,322 hours on it, but it brought $14,000. And for comparison, I mean, that's the highest auction price on a 742B in 5 years, and it's the second highest ever. The only higher one I've ever seen was November of 16 in Fessenden, North Dakota. But okay. Interestingly, that was a 91 model with only 565 hours and brought 14.5.
Okay.
So here you go, five years later, almost triple the hours and about to save money. So that was Friday. But then the next day, this is the one that was really something. So this sale was in Watertown, South Dakota. I'm not sure how to pronounce the auctioneer's name. I think it's Asoff Real Estate and Auction. Okay. Again, kind of a small auction, but they had a Bobcat 773. So again, a little age on it. 1,729 hours, really sharp, very clean. It brought $27,500. Now, another example here, not just a record high auction price, Chip, but the previous high was $20,000. So it went 75, almost a third.
A third over. Yeah.
But another interesting data point is that record of 20,000 was set just back in end of March in Bowman, North Dakota.
Yeah.
Pfeiffer Auction sold a 2000 model with 1,709 hours for 20. And now we see 27.5. So again, when the nice ones are showing up, like the money's starting to flow. But even beyond those two Bobcats, I mean, let's go back to last Wednesday, Ellsworth, Wisconsin. Our friends at the Steffes Group had a little online farm estate sale that had a later model. It was a John Deere 317G skid steer, like new. Only 76 hours on it, but it brought 45.5. Again, another record high price. And again, the record it clipped, which was $43,000, that was just set back in end of January in Paris, Missouri. So again, good use skid steers are just skyrocketing higher.
I would say, well, there's some sort of a livestock connection to those operations and those prices, but not necessarily, right?
Well, again, right now we're drifting into the supply chain and how gummed up new equipment sales are and availability and dealer used inventories are pinched. So it's what's happening in the market plus what's happening in the world in general. So it's really something right now.
And another thing of what is happening in general is some consolidation in the industry, and you've got some news to report.
Yeah, last week, folks maybe saw our post on it, but Sullivan Auctioneers acquired Henslin Auction, one of the fantastic auction companies up here my way in Minnesota. Of course, I have great friends on both sides of that equation. And just a kind of a big development there. We're beginning to see a lot of consolidation in the industry. Chip, our friends at Jeff Martin Auctioneers have been very active. They had recently purchased Fahey Sales up out of Minnesota. So I think Jeff Martin, now they're up to 12 locations all across the country. So I think for some of these strong regional auction firms, maybe the owners might be a little older, but the continual need to invest in technology, it just doesn't stop. So I think that they can find good partners with a great outfit like Jeff Martin or Sullivan Auctioneers and benefit from their continuing push. I think we're going to see more of this going forward.
Okay. All right. Very cool. Let's go ahead and what are you watching in the week ahead here?
Well, a couple auctions I'm watching. One is out a little bit. It's November 1st, a week from today, but our friends at Schrader Real Estate and Auction, very nice farm auction. The Tom Herman farm sale in Bronson, Michigan. John Deere 8235R with just over 3,000 hours. John Deere 7410 mechanical with a loader, 3,750 hours. John Deere 8200 mechanical, good hours on it. Nice John Deere 4430, 7,000 hours. So again, check that out, folks, SchraderAuction.com, or we'll actually have all the pictures and items right in MachineryPete.com with all the other equipment listings. So watching that, and then our good friends at the Steffes Group, another busy week, eight machinery auctions this week, three land sales, a hay auction, and I got a shout out. They have a sale November 10th, and on this sale is a Deutz DX100 with 4,822 hours, owned by Brandon Bruckner, Larimore, North Dakota. That's a sharp unit. It's going to be fun to watch it sell.
Very cool. Boy, the Steffes Group's got another busy week. That's another eight equipment auctions to handle this week. Wow. Good stuff, man. Let's stay on top of it and talk again next week, okay?
Hey, sounds good, guys. You guys have a good week.
All right. That's Greg Peterson, Machinery Pete. When we come back, we're talking the economy with Rich Posen. Critical Point.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Beej, you know, I want to go straight to what's happening in the soybean market, but when you look around the commodity world in general, there's some strength in commodities today, right?
Yeah, definitely. You know, the crude oil's up, front month contracts up about $1 or so this morning. So that's you know, lending some support, and that energy sector is something that, you know, we have to keep an eye on. And you know, crude oil strength is spilling over to soy oil, which has strong gain, which is influencing the soybean market. So definitely an outside influence going on in the soy complex this morning.
Yeah, no doubt. Impressive move in spring wheat. We busted through $10 on Friday and followed through buying today. That's impressive, man.
Yeah, contract high there again today. And then another contract high in the HRW wheat for December contract. And so both those markets are performing well. We have seen wheat futures back off their highs. Weekly inspections were poor, as they were for corn. And that's part of the negative influence in the corn market this morning.
Okay.
It's kind of started to build a little bit here mid-morning.
Okay, very good, very good. Take us over to the livestock trade.
Yeah, last Friday's cattle on feed report was bullish, and that's playing out in live cattle futures. They had a very poor finish to the week on Friday, but got that bullish report after the close and responding with strong price gains this morning. Feeders are following to the upside there. Front end of the hog market is firmer as well and a corrective bounce, but a little bit of weakness in the back end of that market so far this morning.
Excellent. Good stuff. Thank you, Brian. That is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
For 20 years, the Milk Business Conference has brought together the most progressive dairy operations. Make sure you're there for 2.5 days of content to positively affect the profitability of your dairy. It will be held at a new location November 30th to December 2nd, 2021, in person at the Paris Las Vegas Hotel and Casino. Put your strengths to work as we continue to navigate this ever-evolving industry. View the agenda and register now at www.milkbusinessconference.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
I'm Andrew McRae, inviting you to join me for Farming the Countryside, a farmer-focused podcast important to agriculture. It's brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Visit pivotbio.com to find a representative near you.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. Davis, there just isn't much... There's not much give in that used machinery market right now. And like Greg has been talking about, it doesn't feel like it's going to change going into the end of the year at all.
Well, it'll be transitory until it's not, right?
Until it's not. That's right. Thank you. You could probably write
the
a thesis on that.
I think we're about to. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. All right, let's bring in our old friend Rich Possen from Critical Point Podcast. Rich, welcome back. How are you, man?
Good, Chip. Stock market's up like it should be, so I've got happy investors and subscribers. I'm happy. The models are keeping up with the commodities fairly well for these twists and turns, so just keep moving for the next pitch, right?
You bet. You bet. Yeah, Critical Point Podcast, it's available wherever. Where exactly do you go to get Critical Point?
Yeah, actually, we have a site that was nothing but the podcast, and we just created a few months ago a site that gets into education and discusses what I've done over the years, and then it has a link to it. And it might be something easier for people to find it, and it's criticalpointpod.com.
Criticalpointpod.com.
Right.
Okay. All right. Excellent. I'm gonna start with a wide open question. I just want to know what is taking up your brain power right now. What's using it up?
I've got a thing going on when this inflation stuff is probably here for the entire decade, but the economy is going to continue to grow anyways with this inflation. It's going to do well for years. The stock market is going to do well for years. And basically, we just have to put up with the noise creating fluctuations. And I think commodities can be well supported, but the problem with commodities is you get into the microeconomics. You get into when you got a good crop, you got plenty of supply, and yet you got that inflation and the higher input costs, and then you got that dilemma, which way is the market going to go? Is it really going to hold the prices up because of inflation, even though you got high supply, or is it bringing down? And right today, I say inflation is going to back off next year. I know we're in the 5-6% range right now, but I think it's going to back off to about 3% next year. But 3% means the prices still went up anyways. They just didn't go up as fast as this year. And it just makes me concerned that commodities need to back off next year. I don't know how long this energy thing going on right now tied to Europe and China, how long can it support? But my models are saying, gosh, crude oil should not go much higher than this. And natural gas ought to be about done, but how do we know for sure? You know, if you can tell me how cold it's going to be this winter, I can probably tell you whether it's going to last long enough.
Right, right.
So lots of interesting things going on where we've had a shift. I mean, I've been bullish the grains from August of last year into May, July of this year. In fact, even in August of last year, I said I've got to be a bull into May of this year at least.
I remember that.
So that's work, but now... Now we're seeing some gear shift here a little bit, you know, and I know everybody wants to play the La Nina story here in the next few months for Brazil, but from my context, looks like Brazil's doing okay right at the moment. That's it. And that's the problem. I can see, you know, even the people I talk to in Brazil saying, we got a big crop coming. But the thing is that La Nina could strike them November, December, January, February, and then we got a different ballgame.
Yeah, that's right. You know, you mentioned the inflationary pressures continue through next year. But it does back off some, but maybe the commodities need to back off. What flashed into my mind when you said that, Rich, was 2008 into 2009. People forget there was a lot of corn sold south of $3 in 2009.
That is right.
And that... So it sounds like you're kind of looking for that kind of a repeat.
Yeah, not that low.
Okay.
But, you know, right today, I think corn's worth $4.80. But am I going to go out in the street corner and preach it? My dad convicted to it? Not yet. I can see this could be a slow stair-stepping lower. But I think what people need to consider is, you know, I'm looking for a crop problem all the way out to 2024. I don't think that crop problem is coming to 2023. We had a shot for it this year. Fortunately, I started warning my subscribers February to May, but I didn't think it was going to work this year, and it didn't. I mean, the Iowa folks got a hit, North Dakota, South Dakota, but it was not a national crop problem.
Right.
And I think I'm not coming. I'd love to tell everybody, I love bull markets, I'd love to tell them, well, 2022 is on the list, and it is. And I'd love to tell them, well, it's probably going to hit. That's not what I'm coming up with. I don't know if this La Nina is going to really stick in there, you know?
Okay.
And it makes me concerned that supplies will rebuild here. So.
Okay. And we'll talk a little bit more about the supply side here in a moment, but I'm curious, is the risk that the government with the Build Back Better, the reconciliation bill, is the risk that that thing would pass and somehow, what kind of risk do you see if the reconciliation bill does pass?
I think it's going to be even more supportive of the stock market and the economy. It'll help give a yet another boost there. Will it also cause more inflation? I just find it very difficult. How can you have 5% inflation year after year after year, which is like what we did in the 70s, was actually more like 7% of a year. I think you'll see 3-4% quite often this decade. Maybe we get a spike near the end of the decade just before the economy falls apart. Sometimes that's how it works, because I do see trouble at the end of this decade. But I think with that bill passing, it's going to be supportive of the economy for quite a while, and I don't think it's going to overheat the economy. Okay?
Yeah.
And then we'll just see from there. But to me, it just means more money going into the system. We already got lots more money. And if we understand why some will be more bullish on inflation than I, because they're just thinking of that amount of money out there. But that, I'm not coming up with that kind of bullish scenario on inflation.
Rich, and I know Davis's ears perked up when you said the 1970s. Because we've been hearing 1970s a lot on this show. People are going back and comparing it. Comparing current conditions to the 70s. Accurate?
Yeah. no. But I say that in a sense that I realize they're looking at just simply the amount of money printed, and they're saying, oh my gosh, you know, this is so much, it has to be like the 70s. They're missing the business cycle of how things really work. And the bottom line is, economy grows for 7 to 12 years. It's done it 100% of the times for the history of this country. It even goes back into Europe before this country. And then you get a hit. You get a recession for about 1 to 3 years. And this thing just keeps working. It's difficult to time, because I just said, hey, economy might go up for 7 to 12 years. So you got to pick between the 7 and the 12 to find the next problem. So the answer is that when you do that, you look where we are in the business of it, we're just getting started. In the 70s, we had inflation. In the 50s, we had even more inflation. In the 60s, and in the 70s, it blew up on us, and that's called late inflation. We're in an early inflation phase, and the way our economy is working today is we're not getting the impact from printing the money like we used to. And it has to do with how hard we work, how creative, how productive we are. It has to do with how people are scared to go ask for a pay raise and then immediately go out and spend that pay raise. They're getting more bold on that. It's coming. Yeah. We may have a 70s inflation next decade, but I'm not coming up with that this decade. It takes longer than that.
Okay. You've mentioned printing money a couple of times and the money supply that we're dealing with. Isn't that some sort of a risk to us that people have become numb to the idea that we're just printing money?
I know. And what I've come to conclusion, looking back at hundreds of years and then thinking my own lifetime, even when I can remember my dad and his friends, business friends, worried back in the 60s and 70s, oh, we're printing too much money. I've just come to conclusion there is no formula out there that would give us a level of money printing that would say, this is bad, you better look out. It's going to take other factors. You have to look at that business cycle. Like when the business cycle is ready to turn down, that's when, whether it's coincident or not, that maybe we learn, ooh, we printed too much money. But during that growth economic phase of the, where you got net growth, it's just like that money printing actually helps that. And it's just like every decade you see where someone said, we've printed too much money, and in the end, it really didn't matter. And I don't know what that magical number is, and I don't think anybody's going to predict it out of just flat-out luck.
Yeah.
But, yes, I fully agree there ought to be a level where you've just printed too much and your country's going to fall apart. But it's fascinating to me that I just read a book here called Ages of American Capitalism. Beautiful history book. It doesn't get into the heavy-duty economics, so it's not going to – it's a nice read. It explains that really capitalism runs out of money and you have no choice but to print money. But the problem is, if you print it too fast, then that, you could argue that creates the next problem. And then you have to print more money. So you get addicted to it.
Yeah.
And clearly we are addicted to
it. We are.
I fully understand why. Yeah. But I'm not seeing the point where the drug addict, so to speak, is suddenly going to have a heart seizure and fall, you know.
Okay.
Maybe the end of this decade. I've got something interesting for the end of this decade where all I'll tell you is I'm pulling my money out of the stock market, but not today. It really looks good to me. I think everything's on track. We're going to run higher inflation than we did in the last decade or two. We're going to run higher interest rates in the last decade or two, but it's not going to blow up on us. It's not going to get that high. To cause a problem.
All right. Yep. So plan for growth. Plan for growth.
Plan for growth. But if you're a commodity producer, just realize you're going to have moments of being tied into that growth.
Yep.
But you got to watch out. Well, how much are you producing? Because you can kill your own market.
Yep, exactly. Rich, we're out of time. Thank you so much. We need to do this more often. That's Rich Possen, Critical Point Pod.
Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone. Welcome back to AgriTalk, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in this morning. Happy fresh new week to us all. Davis Michelson with Chip Flory.
Yes.
In the wings.
I am 1025.
Roger that, 1025. Over.
Yep.
Michael Clark, BAM WX. Second half of the week for most of the Midwest is going to be soggy, sounds like. It was a soggy one here yesterday in central Iowa. And the thing is, dude, it was a cold rain.
Oh, yeah.
You know? Yeah. It wasn't like sort of this gentle, relaxing shower, because I was out and about. I was fiddling around town, you know, doing stuff. Bro, it was just
flat. A full inch of that cold.
Cold soaker. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. That's
Michael
right.
Clark used the words, it's crazy, in reference to how much precip some areas. He was talking, I think he was talking specifically about Missouri, but then also out into the Eastern Belt, too, how much rain really has fallen recently.
Yeah, it's like 500% of normal.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's crazy. And the bomb cyclone with breaking a record that goes back to the 70s. There it is again. That goes back to the 70s on the pressure readings. That thing came in. It was the wind was trying to blow semis off a bridge.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
To use Michael's term, is crazy.
Yep. Yes. Yes. Well, and a little dangerous, too, I might add.
Yeah.
It's just this. Rich Possen, dude, my man did not disappoint today.
No.
His level-headed, pragmatic view of the business cycles really was a great source of perspective on this. Because we do keep going back to the 1970s, and we've talked to some really, really smart dudes.
Yep.
His point was that this is not the same environment as the 1970s.
Right.
There are some aspects.
Right.
In other words, if you only look at the amount of money being printed, pretty similar. But according to him, the business cycle is working as it should. And he's forecasting perhaps another 10 years of, higher interest rates, increasing inflation, but economic growth at the same time.
Right. The biggest difference being is that where we're at right now in his cycle is an early inflationary cycle.
Yes.
The 70s being a more mature, late cycle inflationary pressures. And that is the difference. You've got to build up to it. These things are, the economy is a massive living, breathing thing. It takes time to change, and because of that, you don't just launch into hyperinflation like some people have. That's another term that we were hearing a lot of for a while,
yes.
Davis.
Yes.
And that's kind of backed off a little bit with the idea that, yeah, you know what, we are dealing with 5%, 7% this year, but that is going to slow down at least next year. We're still going to see the growth, but things will back off a bit. So, and we, it's how the Fed manages the interest rates. The move by Volcker to jack up the prime lending rate, or the discount, excuse me, the discount lending rate back in the late 70s was one of those shock to the system moments. I don't think we've got anybody that is talking about a shock to the system kind of moment that launches us at least at this point. It may come to that, but like Rich said, we could be 10 years away from that happening.
Well, and I've been paging through my notes, and I can't come up with it. I don't think it was Scott Davis who said this, but somebody did a really great job last week of putting us in the perspective of the timeline of an inflationary cycle, saying, look, we're talking about, well, how do we get out of this? How do we get out of this?
Yeah.
And no, he was saying, was it Scott?
Yeah.
We're just sort of at the front end of it here.
Right.
We don't know how this is going to go. It's too early to talk about how do we get out of this. Let it run.
Right.
And that's kind of what Rich was saying, too. Let
it
run.
Exactly. That's exactly right. That it supported what Scott was. The conversation with Rich supported what Scott was talking about last week. 100%. 100%. Yep.
Yeah. Everything is on track. Not going to blow up on us. He seems pretty happy with the stock market's performance right now. Just keep moving till the next pitch.
Right. Yeah.
That's where he started.
That. Yeah. I loved that. Yeah. Just keep moving until then. But he did say he won't have his money in stocks at the end of the decade.
That was interesting and a little bit ominous.
Yeah, it is.
Not a bad little cliffhanger there.
Well, I mean, hopefully it's going to work out all right for me. Because of where I am in my career, that would probably be a pretty good time for me to be thinking about getting out of stocks anyway. So, yeah.
Boy,
you know, the young guys like
some
you,
cards
you got
here
a lot
all of a sudden. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Long time before these good
Long
people are rid
time.
Of me.
That's right.
Back to the weather just a little bit. I got to say, what day was it that we had that frost here? Was it Wednesday night last week?
Yeah.
Michael Clark was pretty close. At one point, he had called the frost on October 15th.
Yeah.
And he almost hit it.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
out here,
I was looking at our at just my cheap little weather app, looking for when it's going to get cold enough to firm up some of these soggy
freeze.
Fields out there.
Yeah,
it really doesn't start to happen until early next week. A week from now, we'll start getting some of those nighttime lows low enough that we should start to firm things up at least out here. I'm not sure about the Eastern Belt. But they're going to need some cold temperatures over there before they can get back in the field.
Because it's rain in the meantime, baby.
Rain
in the
meantime. That's right. Okay. Hey, thanks for listening this morning. Come back this afternoon. Going to have a conversation with Arlen Suderman from Stone X. Always enjoy that. Tomorrow morning, we'll get an update on the condition of restaurants across the country. Have a great day.